created on the second day of creation. The Holy One blessed be, decided to create the angels. Malachim they call. Angels are beings that have no body. They're made out of pure spirit. Angels can only do and function the purpose for which they were created. They have no inclinations, they have no desires. All they can do is fulfill that purpose for which they were created. On the fifth day of creation, the Holy One, blessed be He, created animals. Animals are living beings that have no spirit. They exist purely to fulfill their desires, their inclinations, their natural tendencies. They have no intelligence. They are called nefesh habahami, the soul of an animal. It's living, but nothing spiritual about it. On the sixth day of creation, on Friday, the Holy One, blessed be He, created man. Man was a synthesis of the malach and the behemoth. He had the nefesh habahami, the body, the inclinations, the desires, the tendencies, but he also had the spirit. He had the neshama, which was given to him with a seichel, with an intelligence, so that he should be able to determine his own destiny when faced with the contradictions of the spirit and the body. He should, with his intelligence, make the right decision, so that which he will benefit during his brief stay on this earth should be things that he has accomplished, things that he has earned. When man grows up, he takes a wife. When he does that and has the schus of bearing children, he is a baal, a husband, and he is an av, a father. When a man becomes a baal and an av, he has fulfilled the purpose of his creation. As a baal, the Hebrew word baal means to be a master. But it doesn't mean to master or to lord it over the wife. It's baal habayis. It means a person who is master of his home. His home being his place of endeavor, the place where he works, the place where he creates, the place where he functions. A person is supposed to be a baal, a master over his activity. He should not do things because there is an inclination to it or there is a desire to it, but he should do things because his seichel, his intelligence, tells him this is the thing to be done. A father, an av, is a person who bequeaths to his children, his grandchildren, and all his descendants, things that he possesses. We call our ancestors Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, we call them avos, our fathers, because they have bequeathed to us those attributes that it takes to be a Jewish person, a member of the Jewish people. Rachmonim, Baishonim, Gomlei Chasodim. Jewish people are naturally endowed with certain attributes. They're kind, they're considerate, they're modest. They have these attributes by the virtue of being the descendants of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Therefore, they are called avos, fathers. They bequeath these things to us. And Av, a father, therefore, bequeaths to his children those things that he is a master of, be it matters that deal with the physical, the mundane, his wealth, and also things that are spiritual. Mr. Jonas was the real Baal and the real Av. Mr. Jonas was a very independent person. He did not follow convention. He was the master of his own deeds. He did as he thought and understood was the right thing to do, regardless what anybody else thought. If he understood something was right, he did it. He was original in his thinking. He was creative in his thinking. He was the real Baal. By the same token, he was the Av, the father. He was the person who bequeathed to his children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren values by dint of his behavior. He was not the man to preach, but he was the man who did and thereby taught. This is what is supposed to be done. He was indeed the aunt of many of us, of many people who had the privilege to come into close contact with him. If there was an appeal in the shul where there was a worthy cause, he would step forth with a challenge. I will double what everybody else gives. I will match what everybody else gives. And anybody who could see to the heart of Mr. Jonas knew this was not simple great acting, trying to get glory from his acts, but rather to challenge everybody to give to their utmost, to do whatever they can, and then some. He was an aunt to everybody. He stepped forth with original thoughts, original ideas. When we built the mikveh in our community, he didn't just come forth with his contribution and say, that's what I'm going to give. But he thought of the continuity of the expenses of what's going to be in the future, and he said, I want you to send me all the water bills. The organization benefited from this original kind of unconventional thinking. And I must recall at this time that when he left our community and went to Florida, those who know that he went without any resources. And after he left, we in the mikveh organization decided not to send him the water bills anymore. We thought he should have stopped paying them a long time ago. But for many years, he held on tenaciously and refused to drop that mitzvah. But when he left town, we didn't send him the bills anymore. Thereafter, when he came back for a visit, he accosted me. He accused me. He was furious. Why didn't you send me the bills? And I said to him, because we figured you have other causes. Perhaps your resources are limited. And he said to me a sage piece of advice, which truly puts him into the category of an aunt to everybody. He said, God gives me as much as I undertake. And when you didn't send me those water bills, I received that much less. And it's true, I couldn't pay them, but I believe that if I were to receive those bills, I would have been able to pay them. That's original thinking. He was indeed an Av, a father to us all. He was a man who helped out a synagogue in this city by paying its electric bills. Unconventional, very original. Mr. Jonas Oliver Shalom, in meetings that he participated in, everybody knew that when he got up to speak, everybody would listen. Because here was a man who spoke with his heart. He was a man who meant what he said, and here was a man who did what he spoke. Never an idle word. He was a man who was generous in heart, strong of spirit, fearless, totally fearless. I recall when he told us when he was accosted by a 6-foot black person on a basement, and he grabbed the 2x4 and challenged them. Go ahead. Only a person who is pure of heart and pure of spirit could confront such things fearlessly. Indeed, Mr. Jonas was master of his destiny, and he was a father to us all. Those lessons that he taught us all, by his behavior, by his actions, those lessons remained with his children, with his grandchildren, and indeed his great-grandchildren. Many of them are now studying Torah and yeshivos. Many of them are devoting their life to those things that they knew Zaidi would want them to do. And are teaching their children, this is what your elder Zaidi wants you to do. To a larger degree or a smaller degree, nobody who came into contact with Mr. Jonas was not affected by him. Regardless whether he was a scholar or whether he was a businessman, whether he was an educated person or a simple person, everybody who came into contact with Mr. Jonas was affected by him in a positive way. And whoever knew him will never forget him, and his memory will be cherished by all of us. It is proper at this time to ask Mr. Jonas, on behalf of all those who knew him, if perhaps at any time an occasion came up when inadvertently he was slighted or hurt, to forgive us all. Nobody meant it, and I'm sure that he does. And at the same time, to ask him to be a Melitz Yosher to Mrs. Jonas, that she should be healthy and well, and be able to have the wherewithal to enjoy her children, her grandchildren, her great-grandchildren, to have that kind of nachas that every Yiddish mama looks forward to. He should be a Melitz Yosher to all his family. They should be well and healthy, prosper, and continue on the path that he wanted them to continue in. It should be a Melitz Yosher for all of the Jewish people, particularly those of our children who are now in Lebanon. There should be no more casualties, and there should be peace all over the world, particularly to the Jewish people. It should be a Melitz Yosher to hasten that day when Mashiach will come, the day that we all look forward to, b'mheira, b'yameinu, amen.
I did not originally come here to speak. I came because Mr. Jonas was a special person. I came because, rather than doing honor to him, I feel my being here does honor to myself. Mr. Jonas was a vanishing breed, not only in our community, but in the Jewish scene. Rabbi Goldstein mentioned many of the attributes that this man had as part of his life. Rabbi Deitch spoke about his good-heartedness. But I must touch upon something that I feel is very important for the survival of our Jewish people. This holy and hallowed ground where we are gathered is called in Hebrew by three names. It is called Beis HaKoros, the House of Graves. And of course, with good reason, because as we look around all about us, we see graves by the thousands. It is called also by the name of Beis Olam, the house of the world. For in essence, it matters very little whether during the course of our lifetime we occupy palatial mansions or mere hovels or huts. The home, the true home for all of us, for some sooner, for some later, is here. This is the Beis Olam. But it is called yet by another name. It is called by the name of Beit HaChayim, the house of life. And hearing this, one would think that Judaism was rather facetious in calling a place reserved exclusively for our dead by the name of the house of life. But in truth it is. Because actually, these three names symbolize three different types of people that we meet in the course of our lifetime. The Beis HaKoros, the house of death, symbolize those people who make of their life nothing but a life of death. They eat, they sleep, and for perhaps live luxuriously. They take many pleasures from life, but they give very little back. When someone asks them for a contribution to a worthwhile charity, their answer is charity begins at home. When someone asks them to come to shul, they always have a compelling, urgent reason why it can't come. And so, when these people die, we're rather in a quandary. What do we say about them? That he lived, he ate, he made $100 billion. The funny thing is, you can go throughout the length and breadth of this whole world and read every tombstone and every monument that you want. And although everyone would love to have $100 million in the course of his life, there is no one in this world who would be silly enough to put down as his final epitaph, "Here lies a man who made $100 million in his lifetime." Well, why not? He's an achiever. He certainly is unusual. Very few of us have that vast amount of money. But the answer is, what we put down there, we're putting down for not today or tomorrow, or put down for all time to come. And 200 years from today, if someone were to pass our tombstone and would read this epitaph, "Here lies a man who made $100 million, his first reaction would be, "How did he do it? He must have been a crook par excellence. He must have been a miser. That's all he has to recommend him after a lifetime of effort and toil is the fact that he made $100 billion, nothing else." The Harvard University study dealt strictly with American Jews. The Hebrew University study dealt with world Jews. The Harvard University study indicated that we have today in America 6 million Jews, but that by the year 2080, less than 100 years from today, there will be only 900,000 Jewish people in America. What will happen to the rest? They'll assimilate. They'll intermarry. They'll forget about their Judaism. Even Jewish identity will be a thing of the past. Do you know what Louis Jonas did for American Jewry, helping all these things that were so important to the survival of our people? How grateful we should be to this man. Endlessly. The Hebrew University study indicated that we have today in the world 11 million Jews, no more. But that by the end of this century, there will only be 8 million Jews. Think for a minute. In 1938, the world census showed we had 18 million Jews. In 1945, we had 12 million. Hitler and Maximilian Dechoy took care of 6 million of our brothers and sisters. Horrible. Isn't it horrible to contemplate? And the world was in an uproar. Since 1945, 37 years have passed. From 12 million, we are now down to 11 million. Instead of in 37 years, each adding a million has been lost by our people. Where are they? Lost. Perhaps we don't realize. Hitler had the concept that he wanted to make the world Judenfrei. Free the world. that he'll free the world of all prophets. He did not succeed. We were victorious. We're here. But you know something? He succeeded with many of our Jewish brothers and sisters. Unfortunately, every time we go into to McDonald's to buy a sandwich, he is succeeding. Every time we get behind the car to drive even to the temple on the Shabbos, he is succeeding. And it was the Lewis Jonases in our midst who understood this problem and said, wait a minute, he's not going to succeed. I'm going to give my time and my effort and my energy, and I'll do everything that I can to see that Yiddishkeit remains. And if today we have a flourishing Yiddishkeit here in this city, a renaissance has taken place compared to what we had many years ago, we are indebted to him in no small measure. Here lies a man who lived a base hachayim, a life of eternity, a life of posterity, a life for all time and a life that never ends. That was Lewis Jonas. This man never died. All of us are living because of him. All of us have a future thanks to him. Physically, he's gone. But what he left us can never be taken away from us. Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Aleinu, v'yakol, Yisrael, v'yibu, v'fei shalom, v'lomo, v'fu, yaseh, shalom, Aleinu, v'yakol, Yisrael, v'yibu,
government At any rate, it took me a while till I got over it. The country lost the war, and we never got the peace. Not even up to today, we haven't got it. I got to the United States. Correspondence never stopped. I never got an answer. For 6.5 years, not one answer to all my letters. Twice a week I wrote, well, she was independent, I don't blame her. She had what it took, and I wanted it, so I had to spell it out. After I get to this country, as Mrs. Berzon mentioned it, through my father's employment, I got a very good friend, shall rest in peace. He found out that I came to the United States because he knew all the family problems. How did he find out? A man, a collector for the Denver Consumption Institution, was around collecting money. And he was in by my brother's office. He had a coal yard and a scrap iron yard. And I was there in a greenhorn, so my brother wanted to show off. He gave me $10 bill and said, here, put down Jonas Brothers, that before killed the money. When that messenger was collected, went to Aurora Police, Chicago, naturally the old rabbi wanted to know his own bosses, each one how much he gave. So he seen the Jonas Brothers.
He took them around to all the people to get the money.
Well, that was...
That's what he used to do.
That was... the story will be too long. It'll be 1 o'clock and it'll be closed up and it'll be 1:30. So he loans us a postal card. I have another brother. I hope he's still alive somewhere in the West Coast. Through the Chinese business, we lost contact. He was in China for quite a few years. He writes me, writes to us, I have something for you, please come on over. My brother took his Model T, and we drove to Pomona, Chicago, which is on the east side of Chicago, and Aurora was on the west side of Chicago, 38 or 40 miles apart on each way. I bought a store over there, I had $65, I bought from the whole country. Kosher money, but that was kosher money. American money at those days was straight. Wasn't good enough. I borrowed $600, I bought the store. After having the store for a few months, I was offered the profit for the landlord from the building. He said, no, you ain't selling the store. You're gonna stay here, and I'm gonna sell you the property. Well, the man says, what can I do? I can go against his wishes. Mr. Podolsky, if you remember.
I have a picture of him.
I bought the store and I'm there. I still keep a lot. Score was improving. I was a young man. I had a girl working in the store and a young fella. I had two help. And myself. The counter was the shelf was a wall. There is a counter and you gotta pass the counter. And that girl was about 18, 19 years old. She was a sister. Just came from the old country. And I had a problem.
He had a lie on you.
I had a problem passing back and forth financially, but I had a good rabbi, Mr. Mrs. Mirza's father, Sheresh Kufis, he says to me, oh no, he says, you got too much of a business to live, to depend on this. Naturally, he did not want to tell me what he had in mind, that there was more in the money involved in it. I thought I was in danger. So you gotta get married. He offered, he had two girls for me, the yellow girl and the silver girl. You remember them?
I remember the other girl.
Yes. Mr. Silver girl, but I said, silver girl was an Ungarian girl. Yellow was a very, very big Thomas Lucan, Groisbach Lucan. His name is being seen all over Jerusalem and in Chicago. At any rate, Mr. Lucan says, you gotta get married. You can't stay single. I said, I can't. What's the matter? It's why I'm a boy from after going through the war. And I said, I have a girl in the old country. Oh, why did you say so? It was at 7:30 o'clock. I gently closed the store 10:30 at night.
Well, about 12 years younger than I am, but I'm younger, Waller.
Somebody just says, how's this?
Okay, keep going.
Bernie is really my younger brother. And you ask his wife, she'll verify it, because his hair is nice and full. And like Harold here, it's thinning out and graying out. Because we worry more, brother. See, we worry. We have to worry for the rest of them. And we do. And, you know, it's a funny thing. And we're paying honor to our parents.
With no honor to others.
No, to mother.
Well,
not to your parents, to your mother tonight.
I want you to remember, children, the ones you are married already, you have no choice. You already have. But young ones, the ones gonna get married, the minute you get married, the two people became one. So whatever mommy's birthday, it's my birthday.
See, Bernie, how Dad bailed me out of that one? He got you out of trouble.
But
Mother calls all the words of Mrs. Woolwich back in 2 seconds. I thought we were stalling. But you see, Pop, you forgot to say one thing.
Maybe a lot of it's true. But maybe I said
at the 50th anniversary, nearly 5 years ago, you said something which is worth repeating. And we got some new members of the family, so we have to bring them up to date. I mean, you got the rest of the weekend.
So they're
up
to date.
You know, you said then, they're commenting, and this applies to the youngsters, to Wesley's team. Know where you came from, and know where you're going.
Then you're headed for it.
And one thing else that Grandpa always says, that he forgot to say tonight.
He's getting a little old.
Yeah, he's getting old already.
He's
getting better. In fact, that's why my mother had to go for a pregnancy test to make sure. You have the four for 2 hours. Let me have some.
I have an old mother.
Have you got it now?
No.
I got two things on you because I'm hurry up.
Who is you?
One thing.
Who is you?
One thing you forgot to say, Bob. Dad?
Yes,
one thing you forgot to say. When Lanka Ulkar was born, they threw the pattern away.
That's been proven.
Isn't that right, Bertha?
That's been proven.
You know that better than us.
I don't know you.
All right. Now, I understand, David.